Did that help?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
And then will you simplify, I'm in the heart of the matter, and you always mention having a pickle-sucking face when he reveals something to you, but also I think it was Torah Tuesday, it's all a blur, where you were mentioning motivation and understanding comes after you do. However, even like for myself, when he first revealed Shabbat to me, my heart had a pickle-sucking face because I'm like, I'm giving up my Saturdays. What is this about? I don't know what to do. I'm sitting in the house for 12 hours looking at paint dry. It was rough. So, yes, my heart had a pickle-sucking face. Maybe not my face, but I did it not necessarily because you want to do it, if that makes sense.
Okay. I saw a quote. A lot of you guys know Jocko Willink, right? Jocko says, don't expect to be motivated every day to get out there and make things happen. You won't be. Don't count on motivation. Count on discipline. So you get something revealed to you. You have that. And I don't say pickle-sucking face. I say you look like you're weaned on a pickle. Okay. Same idea. And so you're not excited about it. That's where discipline comes in. And then in the doing, you recognize the value and there's a motivation that comes. Okay? It's the same thing as Jocko was probably talking about things in life like getting in shape and working out or doing something in your career. And so I know many times my best workouts were when I went to the gym and I didn't want to go to the gym. I wasn't motivated, wasn't interested, kind of had the sucking the pickle face about, I don't really want to go. But it's in the doing that the rest comes, the emotion comes and all that stuff. That's where discipline comes in. And we're very undisciplined, okay? There's a famine of discipline in our lives. We're just very, very empty on discipline. We're weak in that area. So, you know, when you first heard about Shabbat, you had all these things come up to try to disturb your motivation to do, and that's what discipline says. He said to do it, I'm going to do it. Right now, I'm not getting it. I'm not excited about it. It's not something that appeals to me the way I understand it right now. I'm going to be sitting around and just staring at the ceiling, whatever you thought at that time. But then in the doing came everything else.
So with the heart of it, yeah. When you're talking about your heart, he knows your heart and you're like, that's the scariest thing you should know. How does that relate? Are you just talking about people who you've been doing this for a while and you still have that?
No, your heart for him is why you did it anyway. Okay. See, I love you. You tell me Shabbat, because you pop my bubble, you tell me Shabbat is something I need to keep. So my heart for you is what makes me do, even if I don't want to do. Okay? Now, if your heart was for you, you wouldn't have done, because you didn't get excited about the idea. Give up my Saturdays, I'm not going to have anything to do, what am I going to do? Okay, so that's you saying, I'm not interested. Not because you're against Torah, there's just nothing appealing the way you understood it, right? You understood it in a way that was just not appealing. Now, of course, now in doing it, you find it, I'm sure, very appealing. You see the peace in it and the things you get to do and all the stuff, the fellowship and everything else. But it's the heart for him that gets you to do when you don't understand it, you don't get it, but you trust that you will. Okay?
Awesome. Okay. So I know I'm still on guard from leaving out of the deception. Mm-hmm. So for me, when I read... And even when I was in the deception, I needed all my questions answered. And they'd make something up, right? You realize now they made a lot of stuff up. Stuff that you'll even honestly say, that's above my pay grade. No one knows the answer to this. And I appreciate that. But with that being said, I can't remember the verse, but he talked about what's revealed to us is for us and what's for him is for him. He'll reveal it later.
Yep.
So is everything, should you come to a part in scripture that you don't understand? Because I feel uncomfortable just skipping over it and saying, oh, that's one of those things that's not for us. Because my flesh doesn't want me to be deceived again.
No, no, no. See, you have an advantage, which is what I keep kind of hitting hard all the time, is that you have someone to ask. So when you do get the stuff you don't understand, that's when you ask. And then if I tell you, look, that's something that you can put on the shelf, it's okay to put it there because right now we really don't have those answers, or he hasn't chosen to reveal it, at least you're getting it from an anointed, appointed, whose job it is to help you with that. Because I may just answer your question. I mean, as Billy likes to talk about, the first time we talked, he gave me some questions that he never got good answers to, and I gave him the answers right there. So he could have just skipped over that stuff, or he could have asked and then there's answers. So the only way to know is to come and ask. So you're reading something, take that thing, write it down, and say, okay, I'm going to skip it for now, but I'm going to go ask that question.
Okay. And then my last one, which is a little long, if it's in the teaching, let me know. When he's talking in Revelation to the churches, and he says, I hold this against you, a couple of them, I know that's for them, and I'm still thinking about how we learned it in the deception. But when he talks about to one of them adhering to the teachings of the Nicolaitis or something that I hate. Okay. Can you just compare that to now? Because that came up, and then we just did Korach, and then the whole thing with people coming and leaving, and you just made really great points about coming, get out of their tent, get away from their tent, get away from them, and all that good stuff. Just to identify, like, he's given these harsh warnings to these churches, and how can you, in a way, apply that to what it would look like today with Korach in mind and the recent things?
All right. So I have often looked up, from time to time, I've looked up to understand what it means by the doctrines of the Nicolaitans and that kind of thing. And quite frankly, nobody really knows. They have all kinds of people out there that have guesses, and their guesses, by the way, don't necessarily match and that kind of thing. But what we can do is understand that what he was writing it to those people at that time understood what that was when John was writing that. Now, what we can take today is to say you have your teacher, like John was teaching at that point, who says you need to beware of those out there that are teaching this mixed message of Messiah and some Torah and, you know what I'm saying, this mix that's out there where it's part Christianity, part Messianic Israel, part whatever, okay? And that's what the warning is for you to, you don't want to be buying into, the whole point is they were buying into the teachings of a group of people that were not teaching what was supposed to be taught, whatever that was, okay? There are those that use it as a way to attack any kind of vertical structure because the Nicolaitans were doing something with vertical structure. Whatever it is, that's not really relevant specifically to us because he's not chosen to give us a clear historical record so we know what he was talking about there. But he's saying is, you are buying into the doctrines, the beliefs of a group of people that don't match this. And so that group of people was one at that time. You need to be aware of that. All right? And so when something has been revealed to you, you understand Shabbat. You should understand it fully. Like, you don't work on Shabbat. You don't do your secular things on Shabbat. You don't do your own pleasures on Shabbat, that kind of thing. And let's say you go to a congregation, and a congregation is selling tickets to something on Shabbat or selling their DVDs and books on Shabbat, or their, you know, half the leadership works also on Saturdays and all that. Then you should know you're in the wrong place. Doesn't matter how charismatic they are, meaning how much charisma, like you enjoy the way they teach or you enjoy their personalities. Because nowhere in Scripture is there any verse about you liking the teacher. You're not required to like your teacher. Okay? Because I've had people tell me about teachers that I've kind of said to them, look, you need to move on from that person. They said, oh, but I liked them. So what does liking have to do with anything? Of course, people leave here because they don't like me. Because they think liking is important. I don't see where that's important anywhere. The teaching's what's important. The information's important. And by the way, I spoke to a guy this week. Maybe he's watching, so he'll appreciate this. I won't mention him, but he said to me, he says, Rabbi, I find you really interesting. He said, I was watching your teaching. He says, when I yell at people, they get mad at me. When you yell at people, they clap. I said, no, you only hear some of them clap. There are people still yelling, getting mad at me when I yell at them. So I said, you don't get to see the emails and the Billy and Rabbi Tom get to read. But, you know, the delivery is not the thing. The personality is not the thing. It's the information. It's the message. Are you hearing from Yah through the teacher? And so you should know by some of the behaviors that teacher has disqualified themselves in some way. And I'm not saying because of their own behaviors, but they're teaching through some of their behaviors. If they're still working on Saturday, how could they stand up in front of you and preach Yeshua, Torah, and Covenant? I'm not saying if a member of the congregation is working on it. I'm saying if the teacher is. And I guest spoke at a congregation where the second in command in that congregation, whatever the head elder below the leader, worked twice a month on Saturday. And I looked at him like, are you kidding me? How is that? I mean, I don't have a problem with you doing that, but you're the leader. Like when the leader's not here, which is like, this guy used to go to Israel all the time, so this guy was in charge more often than he wasn't. And you work on Saturday? Look, if you've listened to Beware False Prophets, I don't know how you go and sit where anybody's singing with Jesus' name. But people do. And they'll go to other congregations. Now, I'm not saying like it's some horrible thing, but it would irritate me to sit there knowing, but that's only because of knowing the teaching. If you're online and you're like getting all mad because I just said something negative about the Messiah you think you understand, well then watch Beware False Prophets before you judge me. Okay? But if you've watched Beware False Prophets, and that's the correct name, by the way, Beware False Prophets, not Beware of, or it's Beware False Prophets. That teaching, if you've embraced it, understood it, and got what it was, you know, what the message was, I don't know how you could sit somewhere where that's going on, where the names are interchangeable. And this is not about sacred name movement. This isn't about how you pronounce Yeshua or not. This is about understanding an agenda for the other name, a purpose for the other name. And either that makes a difference or it doesn't to you. And so this is also part of the teaching, so you're going to get a little bit of what you wanted. This is about being set apart. Are you going to be set apart in your mind and in your heart and in your words and in your singing? Okay, you're sitting there singing this stuff that's all mainstream. You go someplace, you're singing mainstream stuff. Listen to the words that you're singing and the message behind them. It's doctrinal stuff that does not match this often enough. It is doctrinal stuff that does not match this. But does it bother you or not? And so that's kind of where, you know, you can see in the churches, the seven assemblies of Revelation, where you can say, look, you did great here and you did great here, but I've got this against you. You missed the point here. You missed the mark in this area. And a lot of you missed the mark because you're still too much, I don't know if the right word is chasing, but you're pursuing or wanting or looking for a feeling. When you go someplace, you want to feel a certain way. And so you go there and it feels warm and fuzzy and this and that and whatever it is. So you get the feeling you're looking for. And don't chase the feeling. And that's, by the way, why some of these groups are growing way faster than other groups, because they're feeding the emotional chase that people are chasing after. So here, we put it here and everybody starts to show up right there. And they get that feeling that they're looking for. And they go home and they feel great. I don't want you to feel great when you want to go home. I want you to feel motivated, inspired, okay? I'm not saying that doesn't mean you can't also feel great, okay? But I want you to go home motivated and inspired to plug and go forward and push and go after the mark, to run the race, finish the race, get the crown. And so, like a good motivational personal trainer, whatever, I'm cracking that verbal whip on you to get you to do more than you think you can do. To go further than you think you can go. To do one more and do one more and don't stop and keep going. And that doesn't always feel good. But then you look in the mirror one day and you're like, wow, I'm getting this result. I hated you when you were pushing me in the gym. But now I dropped two sizes and I look great. Because trust me, when I was a personal trainer, they didn't always love me very much. Because I would get out of them what they could do, not what they thought they could do. Did you hear what I said? What they could do, which is not always, and actually more often than not the same as what you think you can do. You can do way more than you think you can do most of the time. I know there are a few of you that, you know, aim way too high in stuff you never could do. And that's usually children do that more. Oh, I can do it when they can't. But you can do so much more. By the time you get to be an adult, we restrict that so low that we're aiming way too low. The bar is way too low. And you need someone to tell you, no, you can do this. You can do more. You can keep going. You can get one more in there. You can improve that one little bit more. You can fix that one little thing more, whatever. And no, you're not going to enjoy that. Okay? Now, if you get your head right, you're going to love it. You're going to want, yes, come on, hit me more, push me more, crack that verbal whip, get me going, keep me going. Yes, that's what you want. See, but it's not fun until you know what? If you do it for a while, though, and finally start getting results, then you'll get excited about getting more of it. And here's the scary part. Some of you are going to get those results, get all excited, and still chase the emotion and leave anyway. Because I've got so many people that have left here after I, the Father through me, we'll say, okay, was the one cracking a whip that helped them in their life, that fixed major parts of their lives, only to have them go over some emotional thing. And I don't want you to do that. I don't want you to do that. Look at the results and say, I need to stay because this is where I'm getting the results. Because that's all I care about. I'm red. Remember the personality stuff? I'm totally red. All I care about is results. That's my the whole focus. 87% red, got nothing else. All I got is that and a little bit of yellow to have fun with. And that's it. All right? And so, for those of you watching, you know, there's a thing called the personality or the people code, which is using four colors as personality styles, red, yellow, white, and blue, whatever. I said, but you guys don't need to understand that. And you are only diluting your progress when you go to places that are just going to feed your emotion and they're not going to keep you moving forward, moving forward, moving forward. Matter of fact, you'll find yourself moving backwards. Next thing you know, your walk has gotten watered down instead of gotten stronger. And that's sad. That's unfortunate. We don't want to go there. All right, Taylor, and then I got to give the live streamer some time. Steve. Shh, Steve's asleep. Don't listen. Okay, Taylor, not too loud. We don't want to wake Steve up. All right.
Okay.
I got to crack it louder on him, I think. All right, go ahead.
Okay, Rabbi, so...
Yeah. That soft voice, my soft voice has lulled him to sleep. All right, go ahead.
Okay, so what you were just talking about pushing yourself forward past what you feel that you can, like your limit is, I've always felt like with the personality types and stuff and me being blue-white, on my white side, I always feel like, or I think maybe more blue, I feel like I have like a sensitive nervous system. And anything that I do mentally, if it's like small things, like sitting down and someone enjoying reading a book, if I get to a certain point while reading a book, my brain will kind of just go all over the place. And it's just with little things throughout my life where I feel like I can't push myself forward. So I always say, oh, I can't do that because my body's just not built for it. So I was wondering, with what you were talking about, do I have the right mindset if I tell myself, like, okay, my body's not built for that, I can't push myself for, or is that just how you gave the example about the gym and stuff?
Well, okay, so it's about finding, a phrase I use often with you guys, it's about finding workarounds. So what's my point? I'm 59, not 29. So when I go to the gym, I can't do the same workouts I did when I was 29. That means I have to be more aware of the amount of weight I'm doing, the amount of sets I'm doing, especially if I'm not doing it consistently that many days a week, so I kind of not getting, building that momentum, and recognize that I may have to do things in a different way to get to the same place. So if I know I need to or want to read, and maybe my ADD is more the problem than even a color issue, right? Makes it hard for me to sit and read so much, but I really want to read so much every day. Maybe I need to break it up into smaller portions and just get it done by doing it twice in the day instead of once in the day. And so it's finding the workarounds based on what it is you want to accomplish. Let's say there is materials that you want to read. It's you want to learn something and there's a book you want to read, but you have a challenge sitting still reading. I've got that. But that's more ADHD than it is anything else. So what do? I'll read for a few minutes, and then when I feel myself drifting, I'll get up, do something else, come back and sit down and read some more. And so it's about finding the workarounds, because it's the result we're going for. Okay, so as long as you find a way to get to the result, that's, instead of just saying, well, my body can't do it, so I'm just going to give up on the result. Okay, because I recognize now that when I start getting frustrated with myself because I can't focus, and man, I had a couple of days in the last 2 weeks where I could not get anything done straight, like, done. I was just distracted and could not focus. So I had to allow myself, go do something else and then come back and go do something else and come back. So it was a very inefficient way to get it done, but I got it done as opposed to not doing it. So it wasn't effectively efficient, but it was effectively successful because I got it done. Does that make sense? And I like to use, actually, for those of you that are out there struggle, they have a thing online called the tomato timer, okay, or Pomodoro timer, whatever. It's the old thing like in the kitchen with that little tomato timer that you'd have for cooking. Well, there are websites that have this. It's a 25-minute task focus. Then it beeps at you, and then you take either a short or a longer break, 5 minutes or 10 minutes, whatever it is, and you hit that timer, and you go and do something else for that period of time, and then you come back and start your 25 minutes. And I find I'm pretty good for 25 knowing it's only 25. And I can say, I'm just going to focus for 25. And when that thing buzzes off, I'm going to distract myself with some other thing that I have ready to do. And then I'll come back and do the 25. Or if I'm in a good zone, I'll just do another 25. Because I may be in a good role and I'm good and I'm focused and I'm good. So just give yourself permission to do something, then come back. As long as you know that you're going to do the something and come back. All right? And that's the key. So what I could have done 3 days a week in the gym, really hitting it, I might need to do less and go more days a week. And just do less at each workout because I have a now older body than I had before, and the joints and the other things, just the muscles can handle it. It's the rest of me that did, you know, that's a little bit older and worn out. Okay? And so I don't have a problem with the muscle fatigue, but what about the elbows and the knees and the hips and the joints starting to go, wait, this is, you know, we can't just do all that. All right, so then we have to adjust to that. Okay, so you have to just make sure you're not making excuses to just not do. Find a way to work around it. I'm terrible with reading because that's a hard thing for me to do. So you know what I do? I listen to books. I can do a lot better listening to books because I could do that while I'm doing things at the same time. Because that occupies my mind while I'm reading the book. So Audible's great. Some of you use it, some of you don't. I think it's great. I listen to books every day. Okay? All kinds of books. Entertaining books, educational books, motivational books. It doesn't matter. I'm listening to books. And I've gotten so many more books read than ever in my life because I can't sit still and read. Okay? Just can't do it. Because my brain is thinking there's 57 other things I need to be doing than just sitting here reading. And I watch people sit and read, and they seem to be happy as can be. My brother was that way. He was a guy who could sit all day and just read. He took one book, I remember one time, it was like 600 pages. He read it in one day. He just sat there and read the book. I was like, wow. But he sat all day, happy as can be, reading. And I envy that. I wish I could do that, like if I wanted to, like to be able to just sit and read, you know? But I find workarounds. That's what you need to do, find workarounds. Okay, live stream.
Okay, a comment here. This lady, she just discovered us last week. Her name is Valerie. She said, and just had a comment on here. She said, I've never been able to get questions answered through any Christian church. This platform is such an absolute blessing.
Look, the reason that you're not going to get answers in a Christian church is two reasons. One is they don't have them. And I'm not saying it to be insulting. They don't. If you actually ask a question, their answer is, well, you just have to have faith. You know. And so the other reason is they don't want to argue with you because they know they don't have the argument to win. So if you ask anything of any substance, they really don't have an argument to give you. And so They just want you to do your altar call, show up, pay your tithes, and then go home. I want you to become Yeshua. Okay? Which means I need to be able to answer your questions. See, now I realize now my seats are so close together, it looks like I only have one. I want to make sure that for the camera, that you see that I have two of these. I think I have them twisted here. I don't know what happened here. All right, well, anyway, there you go. There's two of them there. That's better. All right? Because I said this the other day. You know, by the way, I did a podcast. When it's available, I'll post it also on our place. I did an interview on Friday, yesterday. So it went really well. And, you know, one of the questions that came up, or one of the things I brought out in the podcast, was I think that part of the disservice that's going on there is the teachers are not living this and walking this in a way they need to in front of everybody. And part of that is the tzitzit. Okay? I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that are not wearing them in their teaching. That's the first thing. I don't know about you. Do you look for that when you watch a teaching to see if the person's wearing tzitzit? When you pick up a video and stuff, okay, then you watch to say, by the way, I'm just curious to see if that guy's wearing tzitzit. Now, some of them will claim, well, I'm wearing them under my clothes. Well, you know what? Shame on you. And the reason I say shame on you is it's not because it's required or not. It's because if you're the teacher, nobody should be wondering if you're wearing them. Does that make sense? Which is why I'm even aware when I can see myself on the monitor and I realize it looks like I only have one because they kind of move together. And I want to be clear that I'm wearing four, two on each side. Okay? And so you should be able to see them. You should be able to know that that person's not working on Shabbat, like a secular job. You should be able to know a lot of different things because they should be setting the example and leading by example. And yet, you know, you don't see that happening. There are plenty of people you know out there that are not doing that. And their answer would be, well, I'm wearing them underneath. Why? Why would you, I would never, that's why I fixed my tzitzit. I don't want you to even be questioning. If I see something that may cause you to question, I want to fix it. I don't want you wondering if I'm just wearing one on each side. Okay? Hey, I knew somebody once that I got a call because the person was wearing one tzitzit. And I had to call up that person because I happen to have enough relationship and say, you need to put all four on. Why are you wearing one tzitzit? Person started arguing with me. I said, don't argue with me. Because we had a relationship, and I said, look, am I discipling you or are you discipling me? And he started laughing. I said, well, then stop arguing and put the tzitzit on. Don't wear one. Wear four. Okay, so I have four on. Now, okay, go ahead, next point. And I appreciate that comment, I appreciate that. We are here to answer questions. We're here to give you everything and anything that we can to help you in your walk. All right?
Okay, well, she had... when you were talking about answering the question a while ago, she said, okay, what praise and worship music is okay to listen to?
Somebody said Brianna. Yeah, listen, you know. And maybe that bizarre thing that Billy was writing while he was up here. And he was making up while he was cleaning the toilet or whatever he was doing, right? Okay, so... look, it's not easy to find good, appropriate music. You certainly do not want mainstream Christian music because you don't want the mainstream Christian positional stuff that's in the music. Okay? There is some messianic stuff out there. There's stuff that's put out by some of the messianic. And some of that stuff has problems too. Read the lyrics. Okay? Read the lyrics. Because a lot of times you'll catch yourself singing stuff and you have no idea what you're singing. You do that with secular songs. I've had a few people in the over the years where I said, do you even know what you're singing? And they're like, well, yeah. And I was like, listen to the words you're singing. They didn't have no idea. Like, oh my God. They realized it was like all sexual and this and that. And I was like, yeah, you didn't even know you were singing that. You just like the beat and the rhythm of the song and just singing. Not even thinking for a second what the words are actually saying. So let's pray. I know that Billy has said that he has some stuff he's been writing. We've got to get him some time with Brianna to work on that, right? Okay? And I'm sure others will come around and we'll get more songs written. And just keep praying for that anointing to be there to write, just like David wrote, you know, so many of the Psalms. And the Psalms were meant to be sung. They were songs. Okay? And so it's a hard challenge. Look, it's just like, what do I do if I want to watch Bible movies? Well, most of them are challenging. And so we're prayerfully, you know, hoping that there will be a time that comes where there will be somebody with the financial wherewithal and the abilities to create proper Bible movies. Okay? And so I'm working on a little bit of that with somebody now as far as having them ready and prepared if we ever have the finances to actually go ahead and put together proper children's and adult Bible movies, okay? Animated and live, you know, both, either way, right? Because, I mean, I was watching, What was I watching? On Friday nights, a lot of times, Rebbetzin will like to try to find some Bible movie that we could watch or something that's playing. And it's amazing to me how the Old Testament people behave like modern day Christians when they pray and the way they talk. It's like, no, Jews in those days didn't talk like that and do that, but they act like a Christian would expect them to act. And I'm thinking, Jeremiah wasn't Christian. Or Abraham wasn't Christian, but they have them behaving in very Christian identifiable ways. Like you would look at them and it's very, very Christian feel to it. And you're just like, what is that? It's a lack of understanding of what an Israelite was like back in those days. You don't seem to get it. You know, that's why actually the Chosen, okay? Except for the name, is actually pretty good. And they actually act like Jews of the time, mostly. And you get a fairly good sense of even halachic stuff, and they got the tzitzit on, and they got the whole thing going on. And so if they only could have got the name right, it would have been a much better show. Okay? But the rest of it was actually pretty good. But that's the challenge. You have to find something that's pretty good. Finding something that actually is good is tough. So you want to be a part of this? Pray that Abba, I'm not asking for you, but pray that Abba will inspire somebody or multiple somebodies with a lot of funds to give us the money that we can so that we can pay a production company to go ahead and make these movies. Because I don't have a problem with the idea that we, with my input to make sure it's sound and correct, can get that done and have scripts written. Look, I wouldn't even mind doing it somewhat like that one company did the book of Matthew and the book of John, whatever they did, just basically word for word out of some translation, usually the NIV, which made it horrible. Okay, but it was just trying to make a word by word depiction of, I wouldn't mind doing that with a lot of the different books of the scripture, but I'd want to make it accurate to that and not Christianized in the way that they do. Okay, so that's a good question. All right, anything else?
Yeah, about 90 or so. From G. Ozzy says, am I keeping my household in an unclean state because I have a small bladder problem? Stuck in Ontario, Canada, and I can't mikvah. How do I, as a woman, get into a clean state?
All right. This is, this goes into an area of types of questions, which is, these are temple-specific issues. Okay? So we have to understand clean and unclean isn't necessarily meaning in sin and not in sin. You need to fix your sin state and get yourself into a clean state that way. In other words, a repentful, restored state. Clean and unclean is talking about a ritual state to be able to interact with the temple or not. And so the mikvah that the women would do after their monthly cycles was a temple requirement. And so no temple, no requirement. Okay, we're not saying any laws were done away with. The reason for it doesn't exist. So there's no point to something that you can't do in reality, because going and doing these rituals and there's no temple, people didn't do the ritual unless they were going to the temple. Unless they were in a society where there was, in other words, it's a temple-specific thing. So, if you cannot mikvah, okay, as a woman, you're talking about being unclean, you're not unclean. Okay, not from the idea of tamei and tahor, as it is understood, is temple-specific. Okay, it's a state that you are in related to your ability to interact with those things that are in the temple. Okay, it doesn't mean you did something wrong or not. Okay, an animal dies on your property. You have to then remove it from your property. That's going to make you unclean. You didn't do anything wrong. You're a woman. You have your monthly cycle. That doesn't mean you did anything wrong. You did something as natural as can be for you as a woman. But you cannot just go to the temple under that condition, right? So realize that those things have been rendered moot at the moment. Like, unnecessary, undoable, because the reason for it doesn't exist. All right, next.
Okay, from Miss Anonymous. In regards to the marriage bed, is there anything that we should not be doing intimately, or does, quote unquote, anything go because we are married?
Oh, you got good questions today. We went from a bladder problem to sex in the bed. All right. No, these are good questions. And that's one thing I guess you should also always appreciate is I don't shy away from any questions. I don't care. All right. Look, there is nothing in Scripture that restricts the married couple, okay? A married couple can have intimacy on whatever level they want to have it on. As a matter of fact, there's a mitzvah understanding in the Jewish community that to have intimacy on Shabbat is a mitzvah. It's a blessing. But it's not so much in anything goes on Shabbat. On Shabbat, it's making love. Okay, a married couple can make love and they can have sex. They're not the same thing, right? You know they're not the same thing. There's times when you guys just want to go at it and have a good time, and that's not the same intimacy as making love. We agree? Okay, so on Shabbat, we put away the trapeze and the trampolines and, you know, whatever else you're using. And it's okay to make love. Because that's the ultimate expression of what Abba put you together to do. To embrace each other in the ultimate sense and love each other fully. Okay? And that's certainly appropriate on Shabbat. All other times, all of the sexual stuff that's available to you is available to you, okay? And so, I don't know if there's anything specific that anybody like this wants to ask, you could always send that in and ask something specific. But really, you know, the question was in regards to the marriage bed, is it anything goes? Really, it's pretty much anything goes. By anything goes, meaning you both want to do it. Okay, I don't want any man reading this or woman reading this going, well, you got to do the stuff because Rabbi said anything goes. No, you both have to want to do it, whatever it is. Okay? You both have to want to do it. Okay? I'm just pointing that out. All right, next question.
From Ruth says, is it normal to feel stagnant at times during our walk?
Yes, absolutely. But let me just go back to the other question just for one last second. I don't want anybody to misread what I said about Shabbat either. Don't use that on your partner, on your spouse, not your partner, but your spouse, right? And say, well, we have to do this because I want to on Shabbat because Rabbi said it was a mitzvah. No, you still have to both want to. If you're not both comfortable with that because one may feel like it's Shabbat, I really don't want to do that stuff, then don't push the issue. And say, well, Rabbi said. No, I'm just telling you that it's perceived by some as a blessing of expression of this the way. None of this should be used as a leverage, okay? I'm not weaponizing this to you, okay? I'm not giving you some sort of leverage. Well, Rabbi said, all right, stop that. Don't do that. Don't use me in the bedroom as a leverage point, okay? Nobody should mention my name when they're in the bed, okay? Except my wife, of course. Did I make everybody red yet? I got more. No. And people are thinking, why didn't he just go to the next question? We were better with the stagnant question. No, I'm serious. I get accused a lot that I say something and then people represent the fullness of what I was going for, and they use it then to leverage their spouse. Well, Rabbi said, well, you know, wait, I said you can, and that it's appropriate. I didn't say you had to. So don't use me to push your agenda on your spouse. That's important. I just want to make sure I said that. All right. Now, as far as getting stagnant, I think in anything in life, we plateau. That's what we call that in working out. We call that in any kind of thing that you're trying to progress in. You hit a plateau at some point where you're doing what you're doing, but you're just not getting anywhere at the moment. And so what I've always done as a coach, as a trainer, is the secret to breaking past stagnation and plateau is to change up what you're doing. Not so much change up what you're doing, like the big picture, but how you're doing it. So if you're exercising, do some different exercises for that muscle that seems to not be getting anywhere. If you're studying, change the way you're studying. Don't change what you're studying, but like how you're going about it. In other words, change up the time, the routine, the methodology, or other things to kind of spice it up a little bit, to give it some freshness, to break the stagnation. All right? So if you were doing something always in the morning, and now you kind of feel it, so change it up, do it at night, do it in the afternoon. Do something, break the routine that's now gotten stale. Okay, so the secret to A, yes, it's normal to feel stagnant, and B, the answer is to change up things. Do things that you're not doing or do them a little bit differently. Okay, change it up a little bit. You change the routine, it freshens things up. Okay, look, my brothers and I used to have this thing where we had 2 bedrooms, 3 boys. So we had a bunk bed in 1 bedroom and a single bed in the other. And every year, spring cleaning time, we would rotate. And one of the things we also did in rotating, not only did we get a different space, but we would change around the configuration. We tried the bed against that wall, we tried the beds against this wall, because it just gave you like a whole, like you're in a whole new place. And sometimes you need to change things up, okay? So change things up and you'll break the stagnation rut that you're in, okay? Next.
That's awesome. We have a first timer here, Tracy Finch. She said, first time here, I think I found my home. She says, this is real life.
Amen. Yeah, I don't think you're going to find too many ministries answering the sex question that way. So there you go. And I didn't turn red at all, you see, so it doesn't, you know.
Okay, from Erica Barker, says, like we are not to hang out with people who are not in unity with our walk. Should we also avoid spending y'all's money at businesses that support and celebrate things like the Pride Month, LGBT, abortions, etc.?
All right. That's a really good question because it gives me the opportunity to kind of make a point. It says, we are not to hang out with people who are not in unity with our walk. And what is the reason why you would be discouraged from hanging out with people that are not in unity? Because the possibility is that what they're doing will influence you. Because you have a relationship with them. You're friends. And so there is a understanding of sharing of information and in potentially influencing each other. A business is different. If I go into a business to buy furniture, I'm going into the business to buy furniture. If I'm going into a business to buy technology, I'm going into the business to buy technology. If they're celebrating and supporting all kinds of whatever, it doesn't affect me at all. I may say, that was dumb, I don't agree, or some other thing in my head, but I'm not there in any relationship that has anything to do with except whatever they're selling. Okay, now, if during like Pride Month or whatever people are going through right now, they're putting big stuff everywhere, well, maybe I don't go there until they take it all down if I'm not comfortable being in a building where that's where they're pushing. Just like I might not want to go to the stores when they got all the Christmas stuff, at least in that section where everything is Christmas. I may want to avoid the store a little bit more because I'm not comfortable with it. So there's a difference between not being comfortable with people that are supportive of different things and the potential influence. That business has no shot at influencing you. That's not the relationship you have with the business. What you're talking about is you're uncomfortable. Your reason not to hang out with people who are aggressively out of unity with you is because of the disharmony of the situation, the lack of peace, and the potential for influence. That's a completely different thing than you have going to a business. And by the way, every business you go in, somebody in that business is a part of something you wouldn't agree with. If for nothing else, they all go to church or they all do nothing or they're secular atheists or they're all something that you wouldn't agree with. But you're not in there to interact with them as people and individuals. You're there to buy their product or their service. And so just focus on that. I mean, there are businesses I won't go to because of the way they do business, not because of their belief system. All right? If you go to a place and order their sample platter and that sample platter is not available most of the time, you may stop going to that particular restaurant, Billy. Every time we go to this one place, he has a problem. And then he says to me, don't invite me there anymore, I'm not going. See, but that's a reason to stop going to a business. You go there and you have a problem with the business interaction as opposed to their support of something. All right? Okay. Let me bring out something else that has to do with that point. And Lawrence, if you're paying attention, and anybody who's dealing with our MTY group, okay? I will delete and have deleted any post that is political. I deleted some of the Roe v. Wade posts. I deleted some of the this and that posts, even though they got approved, but that wasn't Lawrence's fault. He didn't know. No approval for political posts. I don't care how excited you are or not excited you are when the government makes a decision or not. That's not for the MTOI group page. Okay? If that's a big issue for you, like, you know, whatever's going on out there in the world, then make it a big issue on your page, on your thing, whatever you want to do. It's not for, our group is for halachic things. Okay? For Shabbat Shaloms and Chag Sameachs and halakhic questions and that kind of stuff. And prayer requests, it is not for what's going on in the politics of the world. Okay? And the other thing I would bring out too, if you are struggling financially, like you're, you know, you're broke, you're out of work, contact us directly. Don't try to post that in the group. Some of you might think, why not? Because then people in the group are just going to believe whatever you said and start sending you money or trying to. Meanwhile, we don't know if you're legit or not. We don't know what your real need is or not. We don't know anything about you. So you contact us, and if you have a real need, we will see that you get the help you need. Okay? Well, I'm not posting it in the group. I mean, there's a post pending right now that I need to delete, but when I delete it, I want to send them a direct message that says, please contact us directly, okay? Because we have a lot of very big-hearted people that are going to try to find out, how can I get money to that person? You know what happens? Sometimes somebody says something that sounds like they have a need, and they really don't, and they didn't mean for it to come across that way. And next thing you know, I got people sending money to give to that person, and the person's like, I don't know why they're sending it to me. I said, because you said something up there from the microphone, or you said it in the group. And so, please, don't just pour your heart out financially into people. Ask us first if it's appropriate, because we may know something you don't know. Okay? Because we may go up to the person and they'll be like embarrassed and say, oh no, I wasn't meaning it that way. That's happened. Okay? And next thing you know, all this funding is coming in. Please give this to so-and-so. Please give this to so-and-so. And we do. If you say to give it to them, we give it to them. But then the person's embarrassed because they're like, but I didn't mean to do that. I understand that. Okay? And so if you're aware of a need, your thing is to guide them to us. Somebody made a need, you know, there's a lot of people broke. There's a lot of people unemployed. But you know what? There's a lot of them have been unemployed for 2 years, and that's their fault, not their job's fault. We get calls all the time from people who are struggling financially and unemployed and say, well, when did you last work? 2020? Why? Why are you not working? There's work. Now, I know in some countries it's a little different, but I mean, this is happening all over the place. There is work. You just may not be willing to do the work that's available. Why do you want me to give you money when you're not willing to do something you don't want to do? I'm only going to help you when you're doing everything you can do. I'm just like Yahweh. I'm only going to help you with the stuff you can't do. Is that only fair? We represent him. We should be doing it like he would. Okay? So let's be aware of that too. So if you posted anything and it got deleted, I apologize for if you just felt like that was, because people go and say, oh, that group, they just won't let, you know, listen, it's not a political group. It's not for you to post teachings from other teachers. It's not for you to start a debate about or promote some other ministry. It's an MTOI group. There's lots of groups out there that are open format forums for you to post anything and everything. And we post in there too. We post the teachings and things in there because everybody's allowed to do that. But this group is for this purpose. Okay, that being said, we're canceling the group. Yes and no. We just hired a new company to help us with our social media and all of our digital things and stuff that we're doing. And part of that is going to be a clean slate restart of some of these things. So we're going to still have a group, but we're going to probably kill the one we have and start a new one, which will purge out thousands of people that don't belong in there anyway. Okay? And so, yeah. All right? So we will announce that, but don't be surprised when the group disappears, because we're going to redo all of our stuff, our Twitter, our Instagram, everything. Anything that we have, we're going to be redoing all of it. And that will also give us a chance to clean it all up. And we're not going to lose anything. Oh, well, you had thousands of people. Yeah, but not really. We had a lot of people, but are they actually members? Are they actually really a part of this? And quite frankly, from a lot of the posts, they're not. Because the posts show that they have no idea what I'm teaching. Because they'll post things that are completely out of line with what they know I teach, if they were paying attention, right? And so we see those posts all the time. All right, so just so you know, we are going to be still having a group, but I will be announcing when we're going to start a new one. We're going to clean out all of the stuff and then have a new one. Okay, Rob.
Deborah Washington says, you said Yeshua said, no one heard the Father's voice or have not seen him, but I hear you and most people in the congregation always say, Yahweh spoke to me and said, says, please give me clarification.
All right. Look, at the point that Yeshua came, that point, go backwards, he said, up until now, no one has heard the Father's voice nor seen his form except me. That's what he said. Now, we hear through the Ruach from the Father. And it, Yeshua says you will get that information. It doesn't mean that you actually hear the actual voice, nor does it mean you actually see his actual form. But he's communicating. You know, Yeshua says, I'm coming to you. So Yeshua communicates with you. You don't necessarily hear his actual voice, but you feel a prompting in a direction. You feel like he's trying to communicate something to you. Some people have heard audible things. I haven't, whatever that is. But realize that he's speaking to an audience about what things were at that moment. Up to that moment, this is what the case was. Which helps us understand who was interacting with Moses, who was interacting with Abraham, who was, so this is little, not so much little, huge hints at things that we need to understand, because that helps us to know that that was him and not the Father. That's where we do the Father and the Son teaching. So realize that there are some powerful things more than just saying, well, none of you have ever heard him. Okay? And so now when people say, Yahweh spoke to me, maybe, maybe not, but the point is they're feeling led by him in some way. They're, okay? Like, for example, when I had left ministry for a while and then came back, I felt absolute, just overwhelming conviction of put your seat seat on, go back to work. Okay? I didn't hear any words say that. But it might as well have been words because that's the message I got. Okay? I mean, I heard no words, but I got that message very strong, where I felt like that's what I was being told to do. Okay, that came from Yahweh. I didn't hear his voice, but he spoke to me. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay, next.
Chris Zimmerman, or Rena, says, I'm watching the What Are You Thinking teaching, and I'm trying to understand what it looks like to truly captivate thoughts. Is it simply ignoring them? How do you truly prune those thoughts?
Okay, that's from Rena. Okay, and hi to the Zimmerman family up in Canada. Okay, so the whole idea of thought captivity and all that kind of thing is having an awareness that thoughts are simply information. It's an awareness of something. You become aware of something, and so you have this thought. Now you have to have an awareness of the thought. Like, you have to be aware that it's a thought before you embrace it, act on it, respond to it. And that's where we can, quote unquote, take it into captivity. In other words, it's like when people post to our group, it goes into a holding space that needs approval. Okay? Have every thought require approval is basically what it's talking about. In other words, it doesn't automatically just post. And so you then have the opportunity to decide to discard the thought, to embrace the thought, to think about and ponder the thought and whether or not you don't know what to do with it yet. So in other words, you have that space or that time before taking some sort of action. You see something, you hear something, so you're aware of something. So that's a thought. Thought is simply an awareness of something. But now you have to decide what you do with that. Do I need to be involved in it? Does it require a response? If so, what kind of response? You have to have a lot of conversation about it, which, by the way, can happen in a second. But you have to at least recognize that there isn't, in your life often enough, there isn't any of that space so that you would just respond. You'd get triggered. You just automatically react instead of responding, really. Respond to me is more of a conscious thing. So you react to the information. You're aware of something and you react to it. I want you to take it into captivity, which means that I'm putting it, instead of calling it captivity, how about saying I'm going to put it pending approval? Okay? Take every thought into a pending approval status. Because you don't want to just react to every thought. That gets you in trouble more often than not. So maybe that would help, Raina, if you thought of it more like pending approval, okay? Then, if you don't approve, you can discard the thought. So that's how you truly prune those thoughts. Now, if you have a thought that comes often enough, the more you are aware of it before you respond to it or react to it, the more you're aware of it and keep kind of saying no, 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 eventually the thought will come less often because you'll already have a preset awareness that that's not something you need to even think about. So even when it comes into your awareness, it's already, do you realize how much stuff you ignore every second of the day? There's stuff happening around you all the time that you are ignoring. Because in order to focus on me right now, you're ignoring stuff happening behind you and to the left and right of you, or you're aware of that and you're not listening to me. We block out and ignore tons of things. How many times you've been at a party or an event or something and somebody told you about something that happened there and you're thinking, when did that happen? I missed that completely. Because you were focused on something else and you were not aware. Even though you were there and it happened. You know what I'm talking about, right? So this, if we take it with our thoughts, if we take them and discard them, the same thought over and over again, eventually you'll learn to actually redirect your attention from that when it comes up because you realize it's not for me. So you have a problem with a pretty girl walks by or a good looking guy walks by and you kind of go and follow them and watch them walk by. And then you say, no. As soon as you have that thought, you say no. If you have that thought, you say no. Guess what? Next time a person walks by, you don't even think to follow them with your eyes. Because you've already trained yourself, that's not something I want to deal with. So you practice and over time, the thought to your reaction to it in terms of discarding it happens so quickly that that's a good reaction point. You just discard it. All right, next question.
From Joy Baker says, please explain Matthew 9, verses 37 and 38. What is the harvest and who are the workers? I'm trying to get the correct understanding and not what the church has taught.
Okay, let's see. It says in verse 36, having seen the crowds, he was moved with compassion because they were weary and scattered as sheep have no shepherd. Okay, so the church is talking about, I don't even know what the church is talking about. I didn't go to the church. This is simply straightforward. I think the church probably uses this somewhat correctly in that there's a lot of people out there that are needing shepherding. Okay, that's what he's talking about in the previous verse. He says, they are weary and scattered as sheep having no shepherd. And then he switches to the harvest. He says, then he said to his disciples, the harvest truly is great, but the workers are few. Pray then that the master of the harvest would send out workers to this harvest. In other words, there are people ready and desiring shepherding. They need teachers. By the way, he didn't say, I'm just going to send the Ruach and nobody has to do anything. The Ruach will do it all. He said, they are scattered and they're in need. They're weary. What are they weary from? From the world, from the exhaustion, from all of the stress, from wandering around aimlessly, from wanting answers and not finding them. They're exhausted and worn out. So the answer is the harvest is all the people he's starting to pop their bubbles. And there's a lot of people who's popping bubbles, but they need the workers who have the anointing the Ephesians 4 anointing as teachers, shepherds, prophets, etc., to shepherd and work with that harvest or that flock. Because he used a mixed metaphor. He started off with sheep and then he went to harvesting. Okay? And so I don't know if the church uses it that way. I think they do somewhat, but they also, they're more talking about saved versus unsaved, and I don't know what they're talking about. But anyway, that's what I believe it's talking about there. Anything else? We good?
This one, this lady asked the other night on live stream, I told her to wait to zone one, so Delia Alonzo, Rabbi Steve, what is the difference between Kohanim and Levite, and are they interchangeable, and what does Rabbi, Elder, Shamashim mean?
All right, that's a good question. Okay, that's a quick question too. Okay, so the Kohanim are Levites who are the sons of Aaron. So think of it as a subset. The big set is called Levites. Out of all the Levites, there are the sons of Aaron. They are the Kohanim. Kohanim means the priests or the high priests. Okay? So all Levites do the work of the temple. Okay, they have different tasks to do related to that. The high priests had a separate role, a higher role, and they could only be from the children, the descendants of Aaron. Okay, if you remember in the Torah portions, there are the different groups that came from the Levitical side, right? You got the Gershonites and the Merari, etc., the Kohathites. And then you got the sons of Aaron. And so Kohanim, a subset of the Levites. Okay, now as far as titles are concerned, okay, rabbi means teacher. Elder, I think we all understand what an elder is. It's somebody, well, from the way we use it, rabbi would be a senior teacher. So like in the secular world, like think of it as somebody with a doctoral degree, okay, or a college professor versus just an elementary school teacher. Okay, so teacher would be someone more like middle school, grade school, a teacher like that. And then you get this higher level. Elder is someone who is able to teach and is able to counsel. So that's the level that I would put an elder at. You're looking for them for the counsel and for teaching. Okay, but they're not quite at the rabbi level yet. So an elder can at some point be elevated up if they exhibit the anointings and the giftings to go up to the rabbi level. And the shamashim are equivalent to what you know in the churches as deacons, except in the churches where the deacons actually ran everything, but it's the ones doing the physical work, okay? So deacons are the ones that notice that the room needs to be broken down or set up, or that you're showing up in the parking lot with a bunch of packages and they run out to help you. Deacons are always noticing the physical needs in the body, okay? They're there to help with and be a major factor in making sure that the physical things get done, okay? So they're not counseling, they're not teaching, but they are serving in a, so it's kind of like the Levites. The Levites did a lot of physical things. Okay, they did a lot of physical work. A lot of their jobs were the physical things. And then the instruction and the guidance came out of the Kohanim. Okay, the high priests, the higher level. And so hopefully that answers that question, okay? All right. And we have a Hebrew word for elder too. It just doesn't come out of the mouth very simply. It's zaken. Okay, zaken. So it's the Zakanim would be the elders. Okay, Shamash flows out nice and smoothly. Zaken doesn't flow out so easily. So I prefer to use elder for that. For the camera crew, Shamash Rob is going to close us. So he's already got a camera over on him.